Find new customers on a platform that's here to stay. With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising your business on TikTok, now is the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit detecttheSOS.com today to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
So I want to make sure I get this right. Jens Fredriksen?
Perfect.
Okay. And I want to make sure you can move that a little closer. You don't have to speak into it like this, but just, you know, move it a little closer. President of the University of New Haven since when last year did you take it over?
March 1st, 2024. Yeah.
And so it's been roughly a year and a half.
Yeah.
And you've been shaking the tree. Was your goal, first of all, I mean, I have to give Matthew Schmidt a shout out. Mm-hmm. He's amazing.
Yep.
And we talk about Ukraine-Russia stuff with him all the time. And you have a lot of professors, even before you got there, who do a really nice job. But you come to the University of New Haven. Was your goal, and again, we'll get to your backstory in a second, through Vanderbilt and through Denmark and everything like that. We have the whole hour. It's going to be a lot of commercials. It's going to go faster than you think. But was your plan, when you took the job, to shake the tree, or does it just sort of happen?
Well, I mean, I don't think I planned to quote-unquote shake the tree as much as, I mean, obviously I was familiar. I went through a search, and the search was sort of very intense. They give you a lot of information on sort of who the university is and what has happened along the way. And I think understanding that this is sort of a inflection point in higher ed, right? And I think particularly institutions that are enrollment driven, like the University of New Haven, this is sort of a moment to reshape some things, respond to some of the criticisms that are out there, find ways of resonating with this demographic of students. And so, I mean, in some ways, yes, I felt like there were things that were. I mean, you just referenced how some of these incredible professors and how the university has been sort of on an upward trajectory for a very long time. I bump into alums all the time that are like, oh, it was two buildings and a parking lot when I was there.
Right.
And so the trajectory certainly existed, but I felt like there was an opportunity to sort of push the envelope. And also, given the sort of circumstances that we live in, there was an opportunity to really leapfrog and take some calculated risks that would showcase everything the university already is, but then also sort of push the envelope on how do we get to the next level.
Yeah, I mean, the way I think of it, it's funny, we talked off air about Bentley. I grew up in Boston area. I thought Bentley is like a commuter school. I didn't know anything about it. And it turns out it's a great business school, and it's completely on the rise.
Yep.
And then I think of University of New Haven, my first instinct is commuter school and not a lot of residential life, and I don't know much else outside of they have very successful D2 sports teams, you know, for a long, long time. But that was my perception of it. And I guess that's sort of what the marketplace was.
I think it was, I mean, I think it had changed, but sort of perception is reality, right? So I agree with you. I think the perception was very much sort of a transactional school where students would come in, take advantage of some great programmings and some great faculty, but not sort of the enveloping experience that you sort of associate with some of the elite colleges. Obviously, that had already changed, but the world wasn't as aware of those changes. And so really sort of turning a spotlight on everything that's happening there. And in some ways, I think, I mean, it's always great to inherit a scenario that's in some ways better than the world knows that it is, right? So much of it then just becomes sort of shining a light on it.
Yep.
And that's sort of been...
So, you know, and again, I almost don't know where to go because there's so many topics I want to touch on, but is sort of the goal of the marketing element, is it... It's sort of job ready. Is that the focus?
Yeah. So I think, I mean, that you and I read the same criticisms of higher ed, right? Students are investing all this money. What's really the payoff?
Yeah, the ROI.
The ROI. Yeah. And I felt like I was sort of the first to use this language. Now I'm starting to see it everywhere else. But I think it's ROI understood sort of threefold. It's academic, which we're all familiar with, sort of pass your classes, get a GPA, walk across the stage. Then it's professional, which is internships, job ready. We talk about better than ready graduates. And then it's sort of the mental resilience, wherewithal in a world that's shifting. I mean, the job market, you don't know that you'll be in the same role. Technology, we talked about off air. So I think leaning into understanding, we serve a student body, like a lot of institutions, but certainly amongst the privates in the Northeast, that is highly cost and affordability sensitive. And so really understanding how high the stakes are, these are families who are investing in a four-year platform with the expectation of that warrants sort of lasting success, right? And so we have an obligation or a mandate as a university to deliver on that. And that can't be divorced from the job market, from the economic trends. If you sort of step off the campus and you're like, oops, now I need 2 years of retraining. Like right. The urgency around that is heightened at a place like the University of New Haven. And so I think we all understood that moment. We all understood that the urgency, the intensity, and we've sort of risen to the occasion to deliver.
Yeah, I mean, I remember we got to take a quick break here, but like even I use Bentley as a comp, you know, for them to be able to say 99% of our graduates are either employed or in graduate school within 6 months, that is a huge marketing tool that people want to see and hear because kids are more job focused. I was a product of liberal arts and it actually, I'm proud of what I learned in the breadth of my education, but it certainly hurt me trying to figure out what the hell to do in my life. You know what I mean? And I wasn't ready. Yep. And I took it on the chin for a couple of years. We continue with Jans Frederiksen, the president of the University of New Haven. First of all, I just want to thank you for taking the time to come up. I know the school is on this ambitious, you know, build out with the program in Saudi Arabia and the D1 athletics, but I know you're busy. So I appreciate you taking the ride up here. So, you know, going back to your time, you played tennis at Vanderbilt. So you were a D1 athlete, and you get your PhD, and then you've gone in your last school, which is Fisk an HBCU?
It is, yep.
And so I'm just curious, these are basic questions, and from an administrative standpoint, so what's the diversity like within the administration, and is it 100% African-American? Like, I don't understand how it all works.
Well, no, when I was there, I'm trying to think, there was a while where the provost was not African-American. So I think the provost now is not African-American. So you certainly have diversity both on the faculty and in senior leadership.
Hmm.
So yeah.
What was it like?
Oh, it was a fascinating experience. I mean, I just referenced sort of the urgency and the stakes of being part of a transformative experience. So I got to spend 7.5 years, I mean, sort of getting a crash course in running different parts of the university. I ran institutional advancement, I ran enrollment. So it gave me a real appreciation for the complexity. I mean, the financials were tough, like it is for a lot of both small liberal arts schools, HBCUs, mid-sized sort of privates, publics are tough. I mean, I think understanding the business model, I couldn't have asked for a better experience.
So that, in some ways, the challenge is they're trying to fill bets.
Yeah.
Right. That's the challenge. So you did advancement and enrollment. And enrollment, your job is to fill the school.
Yeah.
And that's part of the challenge there. And from Vanderbilt, which is, you know, an incredibly established, you know, great balance of academics and athletics. And so what made you want to work? Like, because you could have probably stayed at elite universities and had different challenges. Because the challenges are still challenges. They're just different. But what made you want to? You're going a little bit of more roll up your shirt sleeve approach here with your career.
Yeah, I guess I am sort of a roll up the sleeves kind of guy, the duo mentality. And I also think that, I mean, at a time where higher education is really being questioned and there are sort of elements of the criticisms that are warranted. I guess I'm sort of a...
When you reference that, by the way, you said it now 2 or 3 times, you meaning just the fact that... it's too expensive and the outcomes are not like...
Well, exactly, right? You what else do you know where you can make sort of a giant commitment with no obvious focus? I mean, the responsibility, in my opinion, of institutions can't stop the day you walk off stage, right? In some ways, if you're going to spend 4 years sort of preparing yourself for what comes next, there is a life learning component to it. There is a preparedness component to it. So I just think that there is a moment, and I think traditionally academic institutions have maybe not been as embedded in whether it's sort of the changes within the economic landscape. I think it's a moment to sort of build those bridges. And at the University of New Haven, I mean, you've got faculty who've worked on and off in industry who are still deeply involved in it, to make sure that students come out and really have an expectation and an understanding of what it takes, the resilience to be professionally and personally successful. And I think that taking that urgency on personally is part of what drives me, is part of what drives the university. And so when we talk about sort of this moment for higher ed, I think it's a moment to rise to that occasion and take a long look at the programming.
So let's go to sports here real quick. Jans Fredriksen, president of the University of New Haven, you played, I mean, obviously to play SEC tennis is a big deal. And so you believe in athletics.
I do.
Yeah. And so I read a piece, I think it was just last week, I forget which publication, but this whole story of how it happened is kind of bananas. And so can you just take us through how, was your goal to take D1 or did this come across your lap? Because I know there was a deadline and then I'll, just take me through the story.
Yeah, no, it really wasn't. I'm sort of in no way prophetic around this. I went through a search and got asked about D1 and kind of said, you know, I think there's too much uncertainty in the NCAA, having experienced sort of, I mean, we all watch it from afar, it seems.
The
like
NIL stuff.
I mean, it's just maddening, right? And so, yet at the same time, I was sort of one to think that maybe it would fracture, that institutions would look to transition to Division II and then Division III for some. Turned out not to be the case. I think what you're seeing is in this climate, schools are really struggling to keep pace at all levels. And then the financials of enrollment, demographic cliffs and financials. So I think what ended up happening was it was clear that there was a substantial risk in the position that we were in, because we're not a school that could afford to sort of travel around the country and just make a division work, right? And so as you hear sort of schools struggling and you're trying to figure out where you fit in, and it's clear that the university for a long time tried to transition into Division I and couldn't quite make it happen.
Because it couldn't get a conference to...
Couldn't get a conference and whatever the dynamics there were. I felt like, having spent a year on campus at the time, I had a good sense of the athletic profile and the fact that it's so integral to the campus experience. And so we had a new AD and
Devin Crosby.
Devin Crosby, who I'm sure you've met, who's an absolute delight. And he, I sort of, with the CFO, we were sort of talking about risk profiles. And Devin said, well, I think there is an opportunity for us to make this leap. And of course, being sort of very aware of the operational challenges around enrollment, I mean, it's sort of like, it's the toughest climate possible, and then you're making these very big moves, right, including Saudi and the Innovation Park and then Division One, and yet I felt like there was a pathway there that to a conference, and we had those conversations. And I mean, I'm sure you know the process. You have to present to the conference and kind of see how you fit in. I felt like we fit in really, really well, walked through all the financials, the vision, and then within the span of whatever it was, 18 days, I don't know how long Devin describes it, but I think we were able to, I mean, I think, again, it's sort of the roll up your sleeves mentality. We were able to present everything that was required, and thankfully the conference bought in, and then you can imagine what sort of building a schedule looks like.
I mean, it's unbelievable that you basically took 3 weeks. You know, schools take years to try to figure this out, and you went out and raised the money. I think part of it is like, if we can raise the money, then we can maybe make the leap. And I think that the priority on D1 sports is a way to get male applicants. I feel like, you know, I've talked a lot on the show that on average, 60% of all college applicants are female. And so it's hard to get males to go to your school. And I look at the University of St. Joseph, what they've done with their athletics. I think it's a way to get males. And I think it's a good approach to try to get males.
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, it's also a way to instill school spirits and competitiveness and all the skills that you want in your student body, right?
What was it like having Penn State come to a 900-seat gym?
Oh, it was bonkers. I mean, but again, I mean, it's sort of you pinch yourself at times. It all happens so fast, yeah. Right? I have to say, in some ways, the pinch myself moment for me was more at the UConn game, where I was like, okay, this looks...
What a great gesture by Hurley and Benedict to do that, though. I want to know what the backstory is there, too, because that's... serious generosity.
Oh, absolutely. And I personally, I mean, I wasn't in any way responsible for that. That's Devin and Ted, and they've clearly done a great job. But just the, I mean, sitting at UConn, sort of eerily familiar with Memorial Gym at Vanderbilt, right? And sort of like, okay, this feels real.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, again, it's we felt like we could make that leap and be competitive, right? And I think we've shown that. I mean, obviously not against Penn State, but we were very competitive against UConn. We were competitive against Columbia. We've won a couple of games since then. So, I mean, hopefully the size of the gym will increase with the size of the program. So far, we've done pretty good on fundraising. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And I think that football is a whole nother animal, yeah. And NIL is a big deal, too. We have to pause, though, because I want to get into that if I have time, but we have to put a pin because I want to talk about Saudi Arabia and, you know, the Trump administration and international students, which you're, you know, not, I mean, I think it's like right around, it's at 17%, but I mean, I felt like it was more, but you're still dependent on that foreign international student. So we're going to get into that with Jans Frederiksen, president of the University of New Haven. I wish we could mic up the off mic conversations with Jans Frederiksen, the president of the University of New Haven, because there's so many topics I want to touch on, and I know we're so limited on time. So I want to get into this. We talked about the D2 to D1 and the challenges there, but it's very exciting, and I'm sure it's rallying the campus student body as well, because it's a source of pride. Yeah. I want to transition to Saudi Arabia, because I don't know how this happened, and my first thought is, well, you must be getting paid a lot, because that's usually the model, whether it's athletes, the golfers or whatever. That's the model. Is it, you know, I'm not saying it's sports washing or student washing or whatever, but whenever there's something like this, I'm like, wow, you must be getting a compensated for doing this. Can you talk about what's going on with Saudi Arabia?
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Holiday PSA from DSW. This is your reminder that shoes are a gift. Literally. So unwrap something good. Like boots that inspire your next big adventure. Or cozy slippers that give you an excuse to stay in. Or sneakers that feel like pure joy. Because shoes aren't just shoes. They're exactly what you wanted. Let us surprise you so you can surprise them. Find shoes that get you and everyone on your list at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or DSW.com.
At Marisa's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that go from work days to weekends and everywhere in between. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. With 25 sizes, 5 lengths, and 6 denim brands, you've got options. And fit experts in every store to make jean shopping easier. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Marisa's.com.
Being what the whole concept is.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess the easy answer is no, that's not the, in some ways, we actually took the same model. So we the University of New Haven has actually educated in Saudi a little bit in the past, both members of the royal family, but also sort of curriculum development back when, I guess this long precedes me, 10, 15 years ago. So we maintained a team on ground. And so I was familiar with Vision 2030, which is sort of the Crown Prince's grand sort of economic diversification, social modernization project. And sort of back to the urgency of what we do in West Haven, right? Which is the urgency is the stakes couldn't be higher on producing outcomes for our graduates to contribute to a labor force, to a society that hopefully lots of upward mobility and taking advantage of all those opportunities. It felt like, given the aggressiveness or the ambitiousness of Vision 2030, which is really a giant economic development plan, right?
And then, smart, too. They can't be relying on oil forever.
Exactly, right? So it's everything from, you reference sports to tourism to now it's AI and tech and this sort of incredibly remarkable transformation that's going on there. And so I felt like early on in my tenure, given the fact that we'd had a presence there, I could see sort of parallels around what we're doing here, because the expectation there is on an ROI of higher education. I knew, I had friends who had come to the U.S. for many years. I'm sure you're familiar with Aramco had sent students just for engineering fields to Vanderbilt, Purdue, Texas, all the big engineering schools, Georgia Tech. And they had scaled that back in an attempt to sort of educate domestically. And it was clear that they weren't quite meeting the capacity of the workforce that the educated workforce that they need to sort of occupy all these new industries. And so I felt like maybe there was an opportunity for us there to go do what we do in West Haven so incredibly well, with no other sort of presumption than we would be enrollment driven as well and solve a problem, the same problem that we face here. You hear from employers all the time that, oh, we need more ready, able, talented young people who are motivated to work. In some ways, I felt like the coordinates were very, very similar. And so we went and we sort of, at first, I'm sure they were not thinking that the first university to receive an international branch campus license would be the University of New Haven. We were told about all these other universities that were in line to be that. And we sort of just kept at it the way that we do. I've been back and forth now 6 times to Riyadh. And the mood has obviously changed rather dramatically when that announcement came from the Council of Ministers, but also along the way sort of built relationships with the Minister of Education, the Minister of Investment. And what they're really looking for is no different than what we're looking for with the urgency of our higher ed here in the U.S. We want to lead the next generation of elite talent, and that talent is global. I mean, the students that we educate are going to interact, whether it's healthcare or tech or finance, in a global set.
Can we just step back for people listening? You're going to say it's like a satellite branch of the university. Are there students from the University of New Haven doing semesters abroad, or is it students, Saudi students, like? Tell me what the makeup is.
Well, so obviously there's a large Saudi population that's undersubscribed that traditionally might have gone to the U.S. that are currently not going. So there's a huge Saudi population that's looking for an American education and the fact that we can deliver that in-country. But there's also a real appetite amongst the Saudis to attract international talent, including our students from West Haven that would then go spend a semester, get him. I mean, you have 150, I think it's now probably 350 American headquarters there the Googles and the JP Morgans, and everybody is there, right? And so, and there's such a demand for talent that why not experience a semester abroad, and maybe you sort of get roped into, oh, I could start my career here.
When is it started?
It starts fall of 26.
Fall of 26. Yeah. And you have the real estate and the building?
So I'm heading back here in about 2 or 3 weeks to finalize what's the initial location for the College of Business and Digital Innovation, which is sort of the first suite of programs that we would offer. So yeah, I'll be there before Christmas.
And you're going to use your current staff to rotate through, or are you going to have a whole new set of academic hires?
Well, that's interesting because we have gone about the process in seeking American accreditation. So this isn't, you've seen this, for example, in Education City, where some American universities or international universities will just sort of farm out to a third party provider. No, this will be the University of New Haven. So we'll have faculty from the main campus. We'll also hire, of course, given the capacity, some additional faculty members. But there's been a real appetite amongst the Saudi ministries to really deliver an American-like experience in education.
I'm really fascinated by the university's ability to offer a relatively affordable education, because as a parent of somebody who's going to school for the retail price over $90,000, I'm kind of blown away by it. So we're going to take a pause here, and we're going to finish with that and a little bit of your take, both as a dad, as an educator on technology.
Yeah.
Jens Fredriksen from the University of New Haven, the president there, joining us here all morning on Brian and Company. And I talked about my personal situation. My daughter goes to Tufts. It's very expensive. It's a huge strain on our household finances. And, I mean, I don't know what the room and board dynamic is from a tuition standpoint. It's at least 15, maybe 20% less on an annual basis, right? It's like $21K per semester. But you're very tuition dependent, right? and there is a fair amount of financial aid as well. How does it work? I mean, how are you able to be this ambitious, whether it be athletics or Saudi Arabia or your work preparedness stuff, and offer that value proposition? I mean, is it white knuckle every monthly statement you get, or like talk about the financial side of it?
It is. I mean, it's like trying to
run. And your endowment's $100 million.
Yep. Yeah. And so, I mean, again, this is where I sort of cringe when I see higher education being painted with a broad brush, because there are institutions that, I mean, with billions and billions in endowment and sort of large real estate portfolios. I mean, we are as close to, I've said this elsewhere, the very existence of the University of New Haven depends on delivering the essence of higher education. Because if we don't do it, then we're done, right? And so you are managing, I think this, you're managing sort of a mid-sized business. You're in the business of transforming lives. You better be really good at transforming lives. And you better be really good at running the business, because there isn't that cushion, right? And so we've been very fortunate that D1, I mean, you depend on donors, right, who buy into the mission, who see the urgency, who see the result. And so we've had incredible fundraising totals over the last, year and a half, and I don't think that's slowing down. So we've been able to offset some of that with large gifts of people who support and who recognize the vision. But I do think that, I mean, again, you're competing, we talked about this, in the same cost base, and you are invariably, because of the students and parents that you serve, the families that you serve, you're trying to be extremely mindful. I mean, you could just not give any scholarships and you would have half the student body. That's not who we are, not who we're going to be. That is a demographic that is true to the University of New Haven, is the demographic that the best is yet to come, right? If I mean, we have all these students, we all know them, that went to high school and, oh, you know, they did okay. They got through it. They sort of thought, oh, maybe college. And the best is yet to come. They are looking for an institution that gets behind them and says, okay, we're not going to let you not only not fail, but we're going to make sure that you succeed in ways right. That you didn't know.
You know, the balance, I've been to, you know, my wife has spent a lot of her career in the private secondary school, you know, high schools. And, you know, there's this model where they'll go international for full pay students to sort of underwrite all the financial aid and so on. And there was a healthy population of international students at University of New Haven. And when things started off with President Trump, how nervous were you? And were you able to retain the same or similar percentage of international students despite all the headwinds?
That's a great question. So, starting off with the fact, because I gave an interview, I think it was the Hartford Business Journal, where they sort of pressed me on all our full paying. In some ways, our international students are the same middle class or aspiring middle class students that we serve domestically.
But a lot of schools don't give financial aid to international students,
and,
right?
And we have traditionally, and these are students who've taken out loans. I mean, so the profile of sort of their heightened urgency is eerily similar. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like we had this sort of, we had a very, very large international population on the graduate front. And I mean, it's no secret that population, given the visa hang-ups, ours was particularly India-centric. India has been hit really hard with sort of visa issues. And so, I mean, our population will have gone from sort of mid-9,000s to mid-7,500s in the span of 24 months because those classes are not being replenished.
Well, that's a lot of lost revenue.
Oh, massive. I could break down exactly how much it is, and yet we found a ways to continually operate in the black, which, back to your white knuckle comment, has been...
Has the climate improved, or is it static? What's it going to be like next year?
Yeah, so I was one of the, I mean, call me sort of the idealist, but again, being the idealist that believes in sort of what American education is, which is the gateway to the most exciting, innovative entrepreneurship, the best business careers, the best careers writ large, I thought that this was going to be scaled back because there would be a recognition that international talent, I mean, I'm an international student, right? And so in some ways, I embodied this very ethos that there was something special about American higher ed as a gateway to all these incredible opportunities. So being an economic sort of development is certainly in my background, I thought this would change. I thought, okay, they're looking for specific, as a small category of students that are using this for whatever purposes. That is a teeny tiny, and I thought, realizing that the American economy depends on this incredible influx of global talent, I thought it'd be scaled back. So far, we haven't seen it, right? I'm hoping any day that there is a recognition that is part of what makes the American economy, particularly now in the tech fields where things are moving so fast.
Right.
You need that population. And so, I mean, pragmatically, it hurt the university massively from a bottom line perspective. But it's also a larger question about American leadership in sort of the economic landscape.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. Trump said last week, you know, he wants to get more visas because he basically went full circle and said, we don't have enough talent to fill these jobs. And I always thought being above the fray with academics was part of the great thing about this country was that, you know, and I understand the China side is a little different because the feeling like they're going to go back and then and try to kick our butts. But in general, like I love the internationalization of our academic institutions. You know, we only have a little bit of time left. I wanted to get a little bit more into your personal backstory, but as a dad, you have two children and you're educated young men and women. Do you feel like technology is, I mean, how much of an asset versus how much of a deficit is it? I mean, as a parent, I struggle with it, but I understand it's not going anywhere. AI in the classroom is a challenge, but it's also an opportunity. So, I mean, I know we only have like a minute and a half, but just what's your general philosophy?
I think it's sort of an inflection point. We have to come to terms with AI is not going anywhere, right? And it's going to be a transformative force. But we really got to wrap our arms around the fact that it has the power to be augmentative, but it also, if we just leave it, I mean, I have kids like you referenced, and sometimes, right, it's all screen time. And we hear this even at the undergraduate, graduate level, that employers want students who can present face-to-face, who can sort of all what we used to call soft skills.
Yeah.
They're certainly not soft, and we need to make absolutely sure that when we deploy technology and particularly AI, that we're still leaning into human creativity, human productivity, human ability to communicate, collaborate. So it's sort of we have a campaign on the campus now that's look up and say hello, right?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I mean, we're all sort of stuck in these. And yet the world out there is still shaped face to face. Yes, it can be backstopped. And I mean, I sort of think that, yes, we're going to be far more productive, but have we really worked out what that looks like? And even the adoption of technology races ahead, right? So part of this innovation park that we now have is technology is so far ahead of the adoption of industry, mm-hmm. right? And so we got to close that gap. It's a time of great change and great opportunity.
So that's where the innovation stuff, that's it, the new parcel you just got. Well, there's a lot going on. I'd love to continue the conversation. And I think that, you know, education in Connecticut, we're lucky to have you. I won't agree with everything, but I just think that the ambition and, like you said, the execution is really impressive. So I want to talk to you for a while. I'm glad you took the time to come up here.
Thank you. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Jens Fredriksen, the president at the University of New Haven.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/tiktokads, and grow your business fast.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detecttheSOS.com today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this. Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.